again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 158. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free, nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. I recorded today's interview last month when I was fortunate enough to spend 24 hours at Philadelphia-based Love & Fresh Flower Farm, owned by Jenny Love. Jenny is a previous guest on this podcast, and yet this was my first ever visit to her beautiful farm, to work with the very talented Rob Cardillo, to photograph a feature story about Jenny, her urban flower farm, and her design work, which you'll see in an issue of Country Gardens magazine in 2015. When we were planning on the shoot, Jenny mentioned that Lindsay Myra, a flower farmer from Australia, was spending a month on a fellowship, and would I like to record a conversation with them? Yes, that wasn't a hard decision to make. I was excited to meet Lindsay. Before I introduce you to Jenny and Lindsay, though, here's a bonus interview with Holly Hyder-Chapel. Holly and I met in 2014, earlier this year, and since then we have had an ongoing conversation about American grown and how the members of Chapel Designers, her group of wedding and event florists, can get more involved in the Slow Flowers project. As it turns out, several Chapel Designers already are members of slowflowers.com, the directory, and we just added Holly Hyder-Chapel Flowers, Holly and her husband Evan's design studio, to the site. After discussing the All-American concepts with Holly, I began to understand that some designers feel I've made it a black and white issue. Either you use 100% seasonal and local flowers, or you use 100% imported flowers. However, the reality for so many is somewhere in between. The impetus behind today's quick interview began last week when Holly posted a beautiful arrangement on her Instagram feed, and I made a comment saying, "Holly, those look American grown." She responded that it was mostly all domestic flowers, but she didn't want to make the hashtag American grown claim just in case one or two stems were not. Holly didn't stop there, however. A few days ago, she reached out to discuss the topic with me further, and I'd love to share these really creative questions and ideas with you. Listen and see what you think. Welcome back to Slow Flowers Podcast, and we have a bonus interview this week with Holly Hyder-Chapel. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Deborah.
Holly is the creator of Chapel Designers, and she also is a past guest of this podcast, and we've been having an ongoing conversation since we met at the beginning of this year about American grown and integrating the education of American grown and the intent of American grown into especially the work that Holly does with all the members of Chapel Designers. And so this all was prompted most recently by a beautiful photo you put up on Instagram, Holly. And was it like zinnias and garden, some things that you had harvested from your own garden? What was that beautiful bouquet?
It was actually the design's like a year old, and it had peonies in it and ranunculus and poppies and Aramaris and tulips, most of it was local.
Lovely. And then you posted it, and people, of course, like it and comment, but I wrote, "Holly, are these American grown? They look American grown." And you kind of responded and said, "Yes, but I'm not sure if they're all American grown." Because of the time that had passed, you weren't really sure. Is that accurate?
Exactly.
Well, I think this is really pointing up a concern that you're not alone in having, which is how black and white is this conversation or this philosophy, or are there degrees of local or degrees of slow? And I actually write on the Slow Flowers website that we are only as strong as the integrity and honesty of the individual vendors listed on the site. You, of course, you take that to the highest level. You're so concerned that maybe one stem is not local or American grown that you
have been afraid to tag it.
Yeah, you err on the side of not feeling that you can tag it, right?
So I love what you said in our earlier conversation when you said you could have a hashtag every effort American grown.
I think that until we can figure this out, that that's a really, I mean, it, that is the best thing that I could come up with. I don't want to misrepresent what we're doing here. And so I've been trying to figure out how I can participate and if I should even be participating, since it's not every design is 100% American grown. So,
well, you're pointing up a true reality, and I am not a florist. So I, of all people, I should not be imposing this, hard and fast rule on people when realistically, it may be impossible for you to achieve a design that you've contracted with a bride or whatever to do. You maybe can't fulfill that design with everything out of your own garden or from local farmers in your area. That's pretty much, you know, a pipe dream in most cases, right?
Well, I mean, it takes the right kind of bride, and it also takes a designer who's a grower. I happen to have tons of product on my property, so I can do an all American grown design. That doesn't mean that all of the other designers that I'm mentoring can do that. And it also doesn't mean that I'm going to get a bride who's willing to do that. So let's say I've got a bride who does want all of my flowers from the garden, but she really wants me to also add in some roses. It'd be really nice to show that 70% of that was from the garden and maybe 30% of it was not. So,
right. Right. So how are we going to do this? Because we're still going around and around about what language to use. And I think it's up to us to sort of throw it out there to the community and get other ideas from folks or suggest an approach. And you kind of came up with one just fooling around on Instagram today, right?
Well, I was thinking if we did American grown and then 100% or American grown 80%, American grown. I think if we break it down literally just by 10 digits, it might make it easier. It would encourage people to try, and it would also, it would make people feel like if they can't do 100%, they should still be participating. But it also will make us remember when we go back on Instagram and we see an image that we love, like, for instance, this design that we were talking about earlier today that's now a year old, I would be able to look at it and remember 80% of that was American grown. I think it'll encourage people to try and not alienate those that don't have the resources that some of us farmer florists have.
No, I think that's a really good point. And I think that it, what it allows, what it makes the net larger or the arms that we wrap around this idea much larger, and people who are maybe not able to go 100% just for financial or logistical reasons can at least have that as one of the many offerings in their portfolio to brides, to say, yes, we do, like you, we specialize in American grown, local grown, seasonal, upon request, you know, given the availability of product.
Well, and I think it'll be fun too, just to see how much the designs change. And also I know from even just thinking about this, as I'm sitting to purchase and buy, if I start to treat this sort of like a game, like, can I raise my numbers? Can I get it higher? I ask for American grown product, but maybe I would dig a little deeper. Maybe I would know more of where those flowers are coming from if I was making an intention. Like, there's so much that happens here because we do two things. We're a luxury event designer, and we're also this green, you know, farm that's producing this beautiful product. We're an agricultural business. I would love to see if I can raise how much American grown percentage is happening in my luxury event floral design. And I'd like to be able to tag it, whereas I have been completely avoiding tagging it because it wasn't 100% pure.
Right, right. I love what you're saying, because all of a sudden you're changing the perception that locally grown flowers are super cheap or sort of wild and not sophisticated. If people realize that the product, the beautiful designs you're doing for these luxury weddings, has a component that was just picked from your garden or just ordered from the farmers that you love, it will, I think it will elevate that kind of, those assumptions, it'll change the assumptions and elevate the whole idea of there's more than one design style that incorporates local flowers.
Well, and I think the brides might enjoy this too. I think it could, it certainly will be a little bit more work than hashtagging just American grown, but I think it'll be a little bit more thoughtful about, you know, how big of an accomplishment we made each week as a designer, being true to this, or it'll also show what types of flowers, maybe it'll even be helpful to the farmers when they see, you know, some of the designers are producing at 20 and 30% and they look and see what types of flowers they're using and that they weren't available American grown.
Absolutely. I think I can think of one specific example, and that's that Protea called Blushing Bride that everybody loves. And I know one of my floral designer friends in California kept asking recently, this should be able to be grown in California. It's other Protea is grown here. Why isn't that particular very, you know, kind of desired variety being grown?
It's sought after.
Right. So you really do have the, and I know you've been talking about this for a long time, Holly, you do have the ability to influence what is being grown, especially through chapel designers, if you have this collective voice that's maybe more, well, louder because it's influential and that you represent hundreds of different designers. So I love this idea, and I think we're just going to throw it out to the listeners and anybody who's following Holly on her Instagram platforms, Instagram, Facebook, what else do you do? Pinterest, Twitter. I'll make sure I put your hashtags on and your locations on my show notes, and I'll do the same. And we'll just start trying this out.
I love it because now I feel like I can play with you more, and I'm dying.
Yay! Well, let's ask you really quickly, and we're going to put an example up. So you said something about the percentage sign does not play nicely with Instagram. Is that correct with the hashtag?
It's canceling out the hashtag. So I had first tried hashtag 100% American grown, and so it just went 100, and then the hashtag no longer linked. So
I see.
It has to be hashtag American grown 100, and then you can put the percent on there just so that I think it's important we use that so that the reader sees and the brides and the clients see that the percentage sign, but the actual percentage sign you'll see will fall flat and it will not link. But the hashtag American grown 100, hashtag American grown 80, hashtag American grown 60, do it that way. I think that'll work really well.
Great. I love it. I love what you said about every 10 increments that we're not like doing 73% or something. I mean, who knows? That's right. Crazy.
Yeah, I could see myself trying to calculate that because I'm that honest and true, and I'll end up going crazy.
Well, I think this is great. I'm so glad that we talked this through today, and I'm excited. Yeah, me too. So we're going to throw this out to everybody. We want more participation, and if anyone listening or finding us out on different social platforms has a different suggestion, we're totally open to it. We just want to be consistent so that there's more of a universal adoption of this philosophy. I think that wholesalers and farmers will be taking note, Holly, just as you predicted. So thanks for brainstorming with me about this today.
Can I, you know, one other thing I want to say, it was really comforting to me today when you explained the slow flowers to me as well, just that as long as I am willing and able to provide it for a client that wants it, then I'm able to wear that slow flowers brand and tag.
Yes.
That means everything to me because I have obviously known I wasn't 100% local, so I've been afraid to participate. And so knowing that your intention is that we as designers offer it and provide it and make it available, that means that we can be a part of this. That's super exciting. You just opened a million doors.
Oh, that's great. Well, I do have sort of three pledges that I ask people to accept or to check off on the, you know, on the box when they sign up for Slow Flowers. I'll just quickly read them. And then I think it, it does satisfy all your concerns. And one, the number one is when a consumer contacts you through Slow Flowers, you pledge to fulfill the order with locally grown and seasonal flowers first. And if you're unable to do that, which I could guess would mostly occur in the winter, you would shift to at least domestic American grown flowers, which in a lot of cases is going to be something from Florida or California. Number two, whenever possible, you pledge to clearly label or disclose the source of the floral elements. So in your case, you'd say, I grew these and then all these dahlias came from this grower in the next county. I mean, that you just try to disclose it when you can. And then third, if you're not able to fulfill the order for seasonal reasons or just inventory, you tell that to the customer and then let them make a choice, knowing that you could possibly refer them to an alternative resource. So I think that those are doable and they allow people to kind of almost treat this like a pilot project to say, you know, I can't go cold turkey, but I'm just going to try one offering out of my full menu of services. I'm going to try to offer seasonal and local as an experiment and see how much business I get off of that.
I think that's a really great plan. And I can check all those boxes. So I feel good about this.
Great. Well, that is good news to both of us. And I think the only reason it took us this long to figure it out is that you produce hundreds of weddings per year. And I travel all summer. So we finally were slow enough to sit down and talk for a few minutes. So Holly, thanks so much.
All right, Deborah.
I'm really thrilled.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
I love what Holly wrote in one of our recent text exchanges. She wrote, if we add the percentage of how much is American grown, I think it will really get people, designers and brides, thinking and causing us all to learn. I like this idea because it pushes us to think about it and to really understand where things are coming from. It would allow us to post designs that are barely American grown, and people will see how the looks vary depending on how much local product is included. I also think it will be very interesting to have a documented board of images that shows the differences of the designs between those that are heavily American-grown flowers and those that are sourced from other countries. I couldn't agree more. So if you follow this percentage concept, whatever you post photos of your designs, use this hashtag, #AmericanGrown50 and then the percentage sign, or #AmericanGrown100 and the percentage sign. Please remember to add #SlowFlowers and #FieldToVase and other relevant hashtags too. Next, I'm so pleased to share the lovely story of how Jenny and Lindsay met through social media and how they cooked up an international flower farmer exchange. Since it was winter at Lindsay's flower farm in Australia, the chance to spend the month of August on a U.S. flower farm was quite enticing. Similarly, in the future, perhaps even this coming winter, Jenny hopes to visit Lindsay during her peak season, and that's when Philadelphia flower fields are covered in under snow. These non-traditional ways of doing business fascinate me to no end. I love the way creative flower farmers and florists are circumnavigating conventional methods of commerce and proving that 1+1 equals way more than 2. Let me tell you briefly about Lindsay Myra. She is an artist, a florist, a writer, and a flower grower. She writes on her website, I am stumbling upon wonder every day. Enchantment and fascination in the natural world infuses my work and stimulates my enthusiasm for botanical culture. In 2012, motivated by a desire to provide a positive alternative in the cut flower industry in Australia, Lindsay started the Little Flower Farm, her own small-scale organic flower farm, planting flowers on a borrowed backyard in Melbourne's northern suburbs. The Little Flower Farm is the first of its kind in Victoria. She writes, our farm is motivated by 3 key ambitions: to offer a more environmentally sustainable product, to encourage others to embrace the living world within their own lives, and lastly, a personal desire to create beauty and lots of it. The Little Flower Farm produces organic, true-to-type heirloom blooms. Founded on the principles of permaculture and rooted in a true passion for flora, her little farm provides a positive and sustainable approach to cut flowers. This year, 2014, has seen the Little Flower Farm move to a larger rural plot in the Macedon Ranges. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. An hour north of Melbourne. Lindsay's flowers have been consistently retailed by Cecilia Fox and North Street Botanical, 2 floral studios in Melbourne. This year, she plans to also offer a CSA subscription, delivering seasonal farm fresh organic flowers direct to customers.
All her flowers are grown in open air and as such are truly seasonal. The Little Flower Farm's period of growing is September to June, so it's kind of opposite what we have here in the U.S. Jenny Love had her first flower patch at age 4 in her mother's kitchen garden on a fifth-generation family farm in central Pennsylvania. And that's when Jenny planted straw flowers and nasturtiums as a little girl. And she writes, "My soul has ever since been connected to the shifting of the seasons and the nurturing of unfurling petals and leaves." Ironically, Jenny needed to run away to the big city to realize just how much farming meant to her, how she couldn't resist the pull of the land. But by the time she could no longer deny her need to nurture nature, Jenny had already put down some serious roots in Philadelphia. She wasn't keen to dig those up. And so, Love and Fresh Flowers was born as one of the first and few urban flower farms located within a big city's limits. Urban flower farming has proven to be just about the best thing Jenny could have ever dreamed up for herself. She finds it even more gratifying to be the stewardess of 2 acres of dwindling urban green space. And that's more appealing to her than to own a vast expanse in a more rural locale. It means the world to me to be able to create and sustain a healthy ecosystem within this concrete jungle, she writes. The flowers that Jenny grows inspire every single element of her little cut flower business. She also writes, "It's an amazing gift to be able to walk the fields, to cut what is at peak of perfection, and take it into the design studio to create a living piece of art. Somehow that never gets old for me, even after thousands of bouquets." While flower farming and event design is an exhausting and all-consuming work, Jenny never tires of the flowers and their charms. She really is a leader in the American-grown floral community, much sought out for her flower farming knowledge and her exquisitely natural design aesthetic. At the end of our conversation, I asked Jenny to discuss the upcoming ASCFG National Conference, which is Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers, which is taking place this October 19th through 22nd in Wilmington, Delaware. Jenny is one of the co-chairs of the conference with the theme Growing Growers. Slow Flowers is a media sponsor of this conference, and I'm very much looking forward to joining Jenny and so many other flower farmers and farmer florists around the country at the event. And you can look forward to hearing many podcasts that will be recorded at that conference later this fall. I know you'll enjoy our conversation today, recorded with Lindsay and Jenny and me while we sat beneath the shade tree and watched Jenny fashion a floral crown for one of her staff. It is a moment forever embedded in my heart and soul, the type of memory that elevates the ordinary to the extraordinary. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. I am visiting Philadelphia today. I'm getting across the country here. I was in Pittsburgh last week, and I was very lucky to work with the amazing photographer Rob Cardillo all day photographing our good friend Jenny Love, proprietess. Is that the word? Proprietor of Love and Fresh Flowers in Philadelphia and a past guest of this podcast. So thank you for hosting us, Jenny.
Sure, absolutely.
And we've had a wonderful day.
Yes, we have.
You had to be a model.
Yes, I had to be a model. Never my favorite thing to do.
Love and Fresh Flowers, beautiful growing fields, and the amazing arrangements that Jenny has created with her flowers will be featured in Country Gardens magazine next summer, 2015. So we'll be sure to let you know about that. But when we were setting this up, Jenny said to me, "I have a special guest on the farm, and I wonder if you'd like to interview her." And then she told me the story of how Lindsay came into her life, and I was like, "Of course." So, Jenny, tell us, and I know you're working on a flower crown, so you're doing two things at once.
Sorry.
You're so efficient. How did this come about, and what is this program that you created here at Love and Fresh?
So I call it the Flower Farmer Fellowship is sort of the official program, if you can call it that. It's a really
the inaugural
pretty,
year.
Yeah, it's an inaugural year, and it's very informal at the moment, but I'm hoping it will become even more interesting and exciting over the years, so I'm not sure anybody can top this year. But basically, I have a lot of people that have gotten in touch with me over the years from other countries, and a lot of them happen to be Australian, for out of curiosity. But and I was really interested in learning more about other countries and how they're growing flowers and what the movement is like there. I was also interested in teaching on a more personal level. I've done a lot of larger workshops like the Seasonal Bouquet Project and our master classes and so forth, but I'm really somebody who enjoys mentoring one-on-one. So it seemed like a great opportunity to bring a couple people here to work at the farm for longer periods of time, people that I thought maybe could really benefit from knowledge I had, and also hopefully it'd be great contacts to have in other countries when I'm on my breaks. So
absolutely. So how did you advertise for the
Just on the blog, on my blog, and through Instagram and Facebook. So it was initially advertised as an international farmer exchange program, and I felt, after I'd done it, I thought I would change the terminology to fellowship because it felt like it's more for experienced farmers who just want to come and enhance their knowledge, not necessarily have it be like an internship program for people that are just checking it out, so to speak. So I wanted it to be more professional exchanges.
Kind of peer-to-peer almost.
Peer-to-peer, yeah, exactly. So so it was great, yeah. So I
And so you did this like earlier in the year? Or?
Yeah, I forget when, maybe it was like May or June,
yeah.
Maybe.
So not very long ago.
So we'll bounce over to Lindsay Myra, and Lindsay is an incredibly fun person to spend time with.
Yes.
You made this day a real treat. Rob felt like he had three female assistants on the photo shoot. Lindsay, why don't you talk a little bit about, introduce yourself and your work, and then talk about how this attracted your attention.
Sure. Well, I'm Lindsay Myra. I have a small growing field in my hometown, which is an hour north of Melbourne in Australia. I started growing about 2 years ago in my boyfriend's backyard in the city. It wasn't really flower farming, but it was how I got started.
It was urban farming, right?
It was urban farming, yeah, definitely. And I had so much encouragement through a Facebook page that I decided to go bigger. So
What did you call it?
I called it the Little Flower Farm, and that was the Facebook page. And it really was through the encouragement that I got from supporters that made me think, well, maybe I could really have a go at this properly. Because up until then, I'd still been working in flower shops and things. So about a year and a half ago, I quit my job and started doing this full time.
Wow! I just want to back up for a second. Yeah. Are you a child of gardeners, or
not
what got you into wanting to grow things?
Not at all. I did grow up in the country, not really rural, but fairly country. But we sort of, you know, I grew up horse riding and herding cattle, nothing to do with plants at all. I think my parents are still a bit bemused as to how I came out so plant obsessed.
How did you get? Well, you said you have a fiber background, fiber arts.
Yeah, that's right. My original studies were in textile design, and I fell in love with hand weaving, and I did that for 6 years. I dragged it out as long as I could studying, and then sort of realized that unless I wanted to move overseas, I probably wasn't going to make a living off it, because hand weaving is so time consuming.
In a way, floral design is a little bit like hand weaving, isn't it?
I actually still consider myself a weaver that just got distracted with materials and kind of forgot about the loom. But it's so many marriages in color, texture, you know, touch, sensing, rhythm, all those things play
absolutely
into both of, yeah, both
I
of
totally
those fields.
See the connection.
Yeah.
And so you found yourself from that working in, would you say, conventional flower shops?
Definitely.
Or so is there a local flower movement in a city like Melbourne?
No. Essentially, I'm the first one to try and kind of give it that name and say, hey, this is what we're doing.
Wow.
What we are very blessed to have is that because we are an isolated country and quite a big country, generally our flower markets are still relatively localized. I think...
it's just too costly to ship from South America or something like that.
Well, until recently, so until the last couple of years, I think in the Melbourne flower market, I'd say about 80% of the product was grown within 2.5 hours of the city.
Wow.
So not a massive variety, but it is local. It was locally grown.
And Amy Nardi from Henry Hudson talked a little bit about this when we did the podcast interview with her. She's a sister flower fan in Australia.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what she wasn't critical of the domestic flowers in Australia.
No,
she just said
that
the spectrum is not as broad as what you see here at Jenny's.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And I think that was what a couple of things that motivated me to start growing myself and to give it that title of local flowers, homegrown, consciously grown, sustainably grown, was that there are actually plenty of people out there doing that in Australia, but they don't. I do fear for their future because imports are going up at an enormous rate, and they're not able to communicate what it is that they do to a broader public. So
that's a really good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Because if you're stuck competing on price alone, you can't win.
No, they can't. And that's what I see. And I think in Melbourne especially, I know a lot about my local industry, and it's different definitely in each state. But in Melbourne especially, most of the growers are aging, and there's very few young people coming in. Mm-hmm. A couple of, you know, usually you're born into it, you know.
Third generation, second generation.
And I worry about that local flower industry staying alive, given the trend that I've seen. Yeah.
Well, maybe you're going to be this, you know, rocking it leader who goes back and starts the Australia Cut Flower Association or something like that.
She absolutely, I think that's exactly what she's going to do, actually.
And we'll be cheering from the sidelines, right, Jenny?
Exactly. Absolutely.
It's not that it's not there. It's just that it's not cohesive, and it's
not portrayed the way you
recognized.
And what I think is interesting from what Lindsay's told me, it sounds a lot like Australia is maybe where the U.S. was in like the 70s and the 80s, when there was suddenly the ability to import became much more feasible. And so if somebody had foresight back then to make it sexier to buy local in the 70s or 80s, we would have never lost our flower industry probably. But now as a result, we did. But I think if Lindsay can step in and help communicate that to everyone, it'll help stop that transition, which I wish somebody had stopped back in our day. So.
I agree. I think there was a lot of sleepiness, or I don't know what to attribute it to, but a lot of people who...
Yeah, just lethargy and nobody was paying attention or something.
Or just a sense that the market was so large, we can put up with 20% imports, and all of a sudden that creeped all the way up to 80%.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it sounds like in Australia right now it's about 20% or so.
No, I'd say that figure's probably changed. I really want to get the exact figures, but there's no sort of body to give them
Maybe
to
your
me.
Agriculture department or ministry or something.
Yeah, I... personally, in what I've seen watching the local market and working in flower shops, I'd say it's probably in the last 3 years probably jumped up about 30%.
Wow.
So it's really has just gone from, you know, something... We've always imported orchids. That's just standard practice in Australia.
Because you're so close to Asia.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep, Singapore orchids. Most Australians think Singapore orchids actually come from Australia.
they're so omnipresent.
Yeah, exactly. But we're importing from Holland on a regular basis now.
So you're the little engine that could and will. And what attracted you to wanting to come do this fellowship with Jenny?
Sure. Well, my entire sort of information basis, inspiration, how to, everything has come from the US and the UK. Because nobody has done this yet back home. All the growers grow a couple of crops. Nobody grows holistically that they're able to produce.
So it's like a monocrop versus like how many varieties?
Farmer florist.
Yeah.
How many varieties do you have? Roughly hundreds.
Hundreds.
Right?
Yeah. Hundreds. Yeah. I don't even know.
And can I just say the flower crown you're making is so beautiful. We have to take a photo of it when you're done.
Okay.
Yeah. Great for radio.
Sorry. Where's the camera? The visual camera.
So you really, it's a social media driven movement for you, and like you've relied on your virtual friends.
Definitely. Yeah. I even ordered a few. I have Lynn Bozinski's Growing for Market and a couple of others. I think I actually have downloaded a few of your articles. Uh-huh. That's been my sole form of how do I do this?
Wow.
I don't come from a gardening background. I don't come from a horticulture background. I was just really determined to to grow some different stuff.
So now you're on different land than when you first started out. Roughly how much land
about
is that?
About half an acre.
Okay.
So not heaps. So it will be quite intensively cropped. It's on a mountain, so it's in quite a cool climate. Really good soil. I'm blessed there.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You were saying that it can be very rugged or harsh growing conditions.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just near Melbourne or Australia itself is kind of a challenge. That's why we love the landscape.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful landscape. What I think in the area that I live, it is the most Mediterranean, it is the most European. It's also the first area that was colonized. So we are very European in the style of plants that we like. Mm-hmm. But I think we just don't realize how harsh our summers really are. Like I keep saying till I got here, like I've read in books that our summers are hotter and drier. But until I came here to Philadelphia and just saw the rate at which things grow because of the moisture that's still around, and you're just that 5-10 degrees, you know, cooler. That's Celsius, by the way. Cooler.
We'll do the translation.
Yeah. I mean, last summer for us, we had 3 months without any rain, mm-hmm. and that's quite normal during summer. And there were periods where it was 110, you know, for three,
equivalent.
Four, 5 days in a row. Yeah.
So agriculture in general is challenged to find water.
Yes, yeah, it's our biggest problem or our biggest challenge, I think, in Australia is water. And basically most Australians, the way we operate is all our water falls during winter. So it's about catchments and big tanks. And
cisterns things. And that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and you were saying, where you're gardening or growing flowers, you have a good access to water? Or
yeah, I'm very lucky. We happen to live on an area that has naturally occurring springs. So we're able to consistently take small amounts of water. So we take, the pump runs maybe an hour and a half a day.
Oh my goodness.
And just takes a little bit of water every day.
Enough of what you need for your crops.
Yeah. So my challenge is to keep what I take under what we're able to, you know, pick up from the tank. Yeah.
What are your varieties? What are you growing that... I'm sure there's some things that you've talked about that Jenny's like, well, I want that now, and vice versa. You always want what you can't have, right?
Yeah, I don't know what Jenny wants that...
eucalyptus, lots of eucalyptus.
Yeah, Jenny wants the eucalyptus.
And the koala that goes with it.
We have a local koala that lives at home, so...
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
That's why I gotta go visit.
Do very many people have koalas as pets?
Not really. It's not a pet, but he's there regularly.
He lives
near the house.
He's like your hobbit who lives there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, he totally, but you know, comes and goes as he pleases. But it's really convenient when international visitors are around.
Love and Fresh has ducks.
Yeah.
Are very
koalas.
Cute. But
We call koalas wombats.
So
you like
the koalas, but you said the kangaroos earlier. You were saying they're kind of our equivalent of deer, they're pests in the garden.
They can be. Yeah, I think like the deer, it's a matter of you've got to learn to live with them because you're never going to keep them out.
And do some creative prevention.
Prevention. Yeah.
Okay, I got you off track now. So tell me what you're growing, and this is when you go home at the end of this week, and so this is like mid August. Will winter have ended and you're into spring? Is that right? Or?
Very nearly.
Okay.
We are in the area where I grow. It is the last to enter spring.
Great.
So in the cities, the spring's already sprung. But I've had missives from home that show tiny little anemones popping up. So all my bulbs will be coming up when I get home.
So that's
the anemones
your first crop.
And the ranunculus and the narcissus and things like that. So. Baby gladioli and things.
And are you growing those in a high tunnel or field grown?
Field grown.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I have no high. I have a couple of low tunnels, but no greenhouse. Mm-hmm. Yet.
So like September will be
spring.
Your anemone, ranunculus, narcissus, and gladiola harvest.
Yep.
And then what will you kind of transition to for your summer, which is basically. What, November, December, January?
December, January, February is our summer. So then we go through all the spring annuals, like the larkspur and the sweet pea, cornflower, nigella, poppies. And then...
A lot of annuals then.
A lot of annuals, yeah. Because I'm on a small space. I think that's the most efficient way of getting a lot of flower in a small space.
Absolutely, that's
And
so
we're
smart.
Able to overwinter because our winter isn't as harsh. So all of those things are currently in the ground without any protection.
Wow. So you planted before you left.
Yeah, I planted those in fall and they'll come through in early spring. And then in summer, I do very similar to over here, actually, things like the zinnias and the dahlias and coreopsis and marigolds and rebecca. Having said that, that's very unusual stuff for Australians. So
I picked up on that your comment about how hard it is to get access to some of this plant material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that'll change with your advocacy, or will it still be so, I don't know, specialty beyond?
Yeah.
Like couture almost.
Yeah, I don't know how much I can change.
It's to Unless do... you become a plant importer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the,
she might.
And yeah, it's to do with the customs laws in Australia. But what I am really eager to do is just broaden Australians' ideas of plants, gardens, flowers. Yeah, because
and the unexpected elements in your floral design. Then.
Yeah, definitely. And wow. A lot of the stuff I'm growing, it's not hard to grow, but to most Australians, it's really rare and unusual.
They're not familiar with it.
Yeah, wow. So I'm like, have a go. Here's a packet of seeds. Try some Scabiosa. They'll blow your mind.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So, how many varieties would you say you're growing? That sounds like several dozen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say over a year, probably about 50, 60 varieties.
Oh my goodness, that's fantastic. Mm. And we
haven't too many.
We have well,
given how you know young I am at this. Yeah.
I do think that there is this this constant discussion, like in the ASCFG boards, about what is the most profitable flower and all. So yeah. I'm sure you guys have had a lot of conversations about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I think it has a lot more to do with the cult. Like it's been great to be able to mentor Lindsay and all that, but I think we've realized how different our societies are, mm-hmm. so to speak, you know, and what that'll be. So she, you know, she's got some work ahead of her to like get people to really dig into that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Well, so. And whereas Jenny, you're selling primarily to the consumer, to wedding mm-hmm. parties,
yeah, to weddings,
and some wholesale,
right.
It sounds like most of what you have been doing to date, Lindsay, has been to wholesale to floral designers, right?
Yeah, to date. I do want to change that. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that that's a sustainable way for me to move forward, especially on a small space. But it's partly because that was my background, so I know the flower industry, so I knew who to go to and who to sell to. And it really was also in my early, you know, months and years, not feeling confident about putting it out there to the public because it is completely new. I wanted to be sure of myself before I sort of put it out there to the general public and started trying to educate as well.
Do you mean as product or as you being the designer?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. So I hope to do CSAs this year.
Oh wow!
So people can buy directly from me bouquets and small buckets of stuff from the farm. And then maybe next year I'll really go into more of the design work.
And being 1 hour outside of the big city, is transportation an issue as well? Or do you just build that into your schedule, like 1 day a week or two days a week?
Yeah, just build it in.
So the CSAs would be drop-offs in the city?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, two drop-off points, one on the north side, one on the south side. I've got a trusty little van, so
you gotta wait till Jenny comes for her her fellowship, and then you'll get it put it to work.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. Yeah. I certainly put Lindsay to work, so I'm sure it'll be a nice return on investment later.
Well, you've been doing obviously some lots of hands-on design while you've been. This is about a month-long event.
Yep.
Do you feel like your design aesthetic has changed playing with Jenny's flowers or working direct, you know, side by side and mm-hmm. picking each other's brains?
It's been really nice to get an opportunity to design a way that is probably a bit more natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
Australians are still very conservative in the styles that they will go for, so quite literally I won't work in my more natural, whimsical way because I know it won't sell.
Right.
Having said that, it's changing, and and I come from a retail floristry background, so it's very much about, you know, what will sell. And I think to some extent I have to just step away from that and say, well, this is what I grow and this is what I do. But it's been a real design, coup to be able to do things like the compotes and all those footed bowls because they're not really in yet.
I wonder if Instagram and mm-hmm. Pinterest will like cross the international
dateline.
Definitely. I think it's going to really help.
Yeah. I think it's happening. I think I think the florists and the designers and the stylists want to see it happening, but we just haven't managed to get the public,
the bride writing a check,
Board just yet. But I think it's definitely moving.
You're going to make it happen, and others too. I mean, you probably will have designers that who want to buy from you who are seeing what you're posting and seeing that there's a softer, less roundy-moundy model. That's amazing. Well, what are your future plans for taking a trip over to Australia, Jenny?
Very much in the plans. I haven't bought a ticket yet, but I really hope to get over there, you know, maybe even this coming winter, and maybe we can teach a class together or something.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
You know, figure it out. So I don't know, but
anybody
good friends.
Anybody who hears that and is interested, watch Jenny's blog, and I will also include your Facebook link if that's okay, Lindsay, so people can track what you're doing.
Website too.
Oh, right. So what is your website?
LindsayMyra.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Easy.
We will do that. And maybe you can share some photos that I can use on my show notes so people can see what your farm looks like.
Be a pleasure.
I think
the burnt grass in the background. That's Australia.
It would be interesting to see if you were talking about eucalyptus. I mean, a native Australian bouquet would be mostly foliage, or
our flowers are very subtle. I think
small and
small and delicate.
Yeah, big leafy medley would be awesome, though.
Yeah, waratahs are probably the biggest kind of flower that we get, and they almost don't look like a flower.
They look like
an alien creation. Waratahs?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that.
Wait, are you saying protea, but with an Australian?
No, it is. It's not a protea.
I'll be like, I know she's saying a plant that
I know.
But I can't quite
Well, I found
it out.
Myself saying vase and dahlia.
Dahlia and vase.
And then, Lindsay, you said that someone back home accused you of having an American accent.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I said here. I got in trouble.
It doesn't take much. Well, anything else you want to chat about before we wrap this up? We have things to do, I know. Jenny's been doing all the work.
Yeah, the flower crown's nearly done.
Yeah.
I think what I want to end with then is to just compliment you both on this sense of 1 + 1 = 3 or more. I mean, you are together really doing some kind of, you know, world floral justice. Like, you're really changing the mindset of yourself, you know, personally, and then in what you do in your business by being willing to learn from each other. And that's going to only benefit
your businesses. Yeah, I think that's part of why I wanted to do the international exchange, because there's such an amazing movement going on in the U.S. right now, and it's fantastic to see all that energy. But it is very much, it has been focused a bit on the U.S., and I personally feel, this is just my humble opinion, that there's a lot of resources for U.S. growers, but not for international growers. And it's not something we should just focus on the U.S. It should be an international movement and not just right here.
I agree.
And so I think, you know, this is a great step to connecting more people. And I'm hoping, you know, through the process of Lindsay's one of two Australians coming over. And so, you know, that way there'll be some connections through that. And, you know, just we'll see where it goes from here, but it's pretty exciting.
Well, that's how I felt when I discovered this British flowers movement and the people who have the hashtag British flowers and their whole association now.
Yeah, it's great. They're really motivating and getting some motivation and a flow on effect over there.
It feels like it's almost parallel with Australia, though, that, you know, the people, there weren't a lot of people actively growing a diverse crops. They maybe were just growing for the big box stores and that sort of thing. And then the design aesthetic is grabbing those local flowers and really changing.
Yeah. I hope we can learn a lot from, I think almost the American movement is so big and has gained so much momentum now that to Australia it seems very distant. Well, obviously
hard to replicate
geographically. You know,
geographically it is, but in terms of, there are a lot of differences between our industry and yours, whereas I think the British movement is somewhere in between.
Okay.
So maybe like a little stepping stones, we could maybe look to that to gain a bit of cohesion amongst the local growers.
I have heard from two people in Italy who want to know if they can bring slow flowers to Italy. And so I think that this is going to have this amazing kind of momentum. I know. And a lot of people, a lot of Americans, I mean, a lot, but you hear about people wanting to get married in Italy. And I've heard of several designers in my sphere of people I know who have been flown to Italy to do weddings for their customers. But then they have a lot of trouble finding local flowers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unless you find someone with a garden and they let you come in and cut, there's not a commercial floral production industry that I've been able to find. So, we'll keep it going.
Yeah.
This is awesome. And I want to end, Jenny, and just ask you, because you're are you the chair or co-chair of the ASCFG conference?
Oh, yeah, I'm co-chairing with Becky Devlin of Roost Flowers.
Okay, so, do you want to just quickly talk about that? Because I think I haven't talked about it, and it's coming up in October.
It's coming up,
And people need to know about it.
Definitely. So it's October 18th through October 22nd. It'll be here near Philadelphia in Wilmington, Delaware. We're really excited about the program. I feel like Becky and I really sat down at the beginning along with Barb Lamborn, who was helping us as well, and spitballed every possible topic out into, be like, hey, what do you think? And through the course of it, I think we came up with a program that will really help every grower at every stage. And I think that's hard to do with a large conference sometimes, but there's something really truly for just starting out, and there's something for growers that do wholesale and have zero interest in working with weddings, and then there's also an amazing design track for wedding people, farmer florists who want to get into more event work, but also any florist who wants to come can come and learn more about how you can use local product and connect. It's registration is going great. Actually, the Growers School, which is for the newbies, is sold out.
I saw that.
Can't sign anybody else up for
I guess you could ask me on the waiting list. Maybe.
Yeah, there's a waiting list.
But the regular general conference is open still.
Wide open. Yeah, we can fit hundreds of people, so that shouldn't be any trouble. The Growers School was limited, I think, like 120 seats because of the space.
Right.
So it's been great, and the response has been fantastic. And I think what's new this year, so the ICFG does a national conference every other year. So during the off year, so 2014 is a national conference. 2015, there'll be four smaller meetings across the country. So this is a big difference because it's a huge, huge one. Everybody from all over the country is coming to it. And I think the difference this year, we've seen such a great response, is because social media has really picked up in farmers. Finally.
Yes.
I'm so excited because it was always my torch. I was like, we've got to get people on board. And
you don't have to explain to people Facebook is.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. I'm so excited because so many more people are connecting every day on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. So there's a lot more community that is already there. And so everybody's really excited to come meet each other in person.
Right. And a great lineup of speakers.
Yeah, and I think the speakers are really fantastic. And so I just think the energy in that space is going to blow some minds, basically.
And isn't there a theme? It's like...
It's called Growing Growers is our little line this year. And it's really about that, because I think in the past, a lot of the conferences were focused on how to grow better peonies. And there's a peony talk this year, not to say that there isn't, but it was like crop specific or, but this time it's a lot more about building the community and building non-farming skills, maybe necessarily like selling, marketing,
design.
Yeah. So, and
professional
really,
development.
Yeah. Professional development. Yeah. And it really is also about connecting, florist to farmers that are in the area. We're hoping to have a fair number of just maybe traditional florists coming in to like
Fabulous.
Scope it out and see what it's like.
So, wow. Well, I'm hoping to get there. I don't have it figured out yet, but I've been to a couple.
And
congratulations. It looks like it's going to be awesome. You're
really
a real pioneer in so many ways. You've got the fellowship and the master classes. And
just love helping people learn. So that's kind of one of my passions. So
Well, I've had a great time with you today, and I know there's more to come.
Oh, there is.
So thank you both, and we'll make sure everyone has some get a chance to peek at photos of your work.
Yeah, check out Lindsay's work. She's an amazing designer and one of the hardest working, supportive people I've ever met. So
I'll say she's pretty awesome. Fun to meet. Okay,
thanks.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thanks for joining me today to talk about all things American Grown. You can find photography, links, and more details about today's guests at deborahprinzing.com. I challenge you to start using the hashtag slowflowers and hashtag American Grown. Be sure to add the percentage of domestic ingredients represented in whatever flowers you're posting. Over time, I bet this approach will engage even more floral designers in thinking about the origins of the stems they use. Holly's really on to something. And I love where she's going with it. The natural beauty and inherent character of domestic flowers will go far to demonstrate the value of staying close to home when you source locally, seasonally, and domestically. That's exactly what Slow Flowers is all about. Before I close, I'm thrilled to announce that the Slow Flowers podcast has reached yet another milestone. This week, we hit our 20,000th downloaded episode. That's cause for celebration, and I thank listeners like you for your support. If you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. My personal goal is to put more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. I promise that when you tune in next week, you'll hear another insightful and educational episode of the Slow Flowers podcast. And speaking of this podcast, I want to give huge thanks to my engineering and editing team, Hannah Holkiertz and Andrew Wheatley. Learn more about their work at hhcreates.net.